privilege of representing the appellants in the case, Steak and Shake Enterprises and Steak and Shake Operations.
Could you speak up? I'm having difficulty.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Yes. The case has come before the court on appeal from the district court's denial of Steak and Shake's motion to compel arbitration and stay litigation pending arbitration. The court denied Steak and Shake's motion on the grounds that the arbitration agreements were illusory, that the arbitration policy that Steak and Shake adopted pursuant to the franchise agreements applied only to prospective lawsuits and not to claims asserted in pending lawsuits, and finally, because in any event, the Federal Arbitration Act did not apply to non-binding arbitration. The court determined that the arbitration agreements here were illusory based on its finding that because Steak and Shake could initiate arbitration at any time, it therefore had the unfettered discretion to terminate a pending arbitration on a whim, the court's language. This is simply incorrect. Under the terms of the arbitration policy that Steak and Shake adopted, the policy explicitly provides that if Steak and Shake requests arbitration, then, quote, the parties shall, close quote, engage in arbitration.
But what bothers me is this whole retroactivity issue, because if we allow you to retroactively apply the arbitration policy, let's say your read of it is correct, why doesn't that create perverse incentives for companies to modify contracts in ways that are beneficial to them after they've been sued by the plaintiffs?
Because it's really not a retroactive change. Remember, Your Honor, that in the franchise agreements themselves that were signed years and years ago, each of these plaintiffs explicitly and expressly agreed that Steak and Shake could at any time institute the system of non-binding arbitration. That was their agreement.
But the arbitration language appears to allow Steak and Shake unlimited discretion in designing its system. So the system of non-binding arbitration. In other words, tell me this. Could the company have designed an arbitration system that would resolve the dispute with a coin toss?
No, Your Honor.
Why not?
It's the Hooters case. The Hooters case was it's a Fourth Circuit decision in which there was a similar right to institute an arbitration system. And what Hooters did is institute a system that was so ridiculously biased that no arbitration provider would administer it, and the court, both the district court and the Fourth Circuit, refused to enforce it. What the court held was that was simply a breach of the agreement. There's no question here that the arbitration process that Steak and Shake has implemented is absolutely reasonable and fair.
Is there any reason you couldn't change that process today?
As to an existing arbitration?
Right. You can
yes.
Create those procedures at any time, right?
No. That's not...
How are you limited? How on the agreement language are you limited in the process that is now in place?
Because we have expressly incorporated the commercial arbitration rules of the American Arbitration Association.
Yeah, but the arbitration language in the franchise agreement reads like an agreement to agree rather than an actual contractual provision. I mean, are agreements to agree enforceable in Indiana?
I think what this, if I might recharacterize, Your Honor, I think what it gives us is an option to institute a system of arbitration that was explicitly agreed to by each of the plaintiffs in plain, clear language in their franchise agreement.
So you would agree then, I take it, that the terms of the arbitration are not contained in the franchise agreements themselves, but rather are contained in the system or the policy that the company created after this litigation was filed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, then how do we enforce terms that are not in the written contract and have not yet even been conceived at the time the party signed the contract?
Because what we're asking that the court enforce is the plaintiff's express agreement that at the company's election, it can institute a system of mandatory non-binding arbitration.
That certainly seems to be a one-way street. There is no way that the franchisees could have enforced arbitration. Right?
That's absolutely right, Your Honor. It is. It is our option. It's our right, our express reserved right, in the same way that the license that was granted to each of the plaintiffs in the franchise agreement to fly the Steak and Shake flag for 20 years was a one-way right. A right we gave to them, this is a right they gave to us.
A one-way right for which you're compensated and from which you benefit from each sale they make.
Oh, absolutely, Your Honor, but not every provision in an agreement has to be met with a reciprocal promise to do the same thing. We grant the license, we give them a system that's been developed over the course of decades, enable them to operate Steak and Shake businesses or restaurants identified as Steak and Shake businesses, and in exchange they agree to do certain things, pay royalties, contribute to marketing fund, and that we could institute at any time a system of non-binding
Go ahead. I just want to give you an example that's not a Hooters example. That's more reasonable. The arbitration policy said that any disputes, for example, let's assume the arbitration policy said that any disputes that arise out of menu pricing must be arbitrated. A dispute arises and the plaintiffs ask that the suit be arbitrated. After the arbitration begins, you realize you may not get a favorable result. What stops you from amending the arbitration policy to say that menu pricing disputes cannot be arbitrated and then retroactively applying the policy to that case?
I'm telling the court that Steak and Shake is not Steak and Shake's position that it can do that, and I think the language of the policy makes clear that it can't, and that is specifically the incorporation of the AAA's commercial arbitration rules. Those rules create a process which begins with the appointment of an arbitrator. It goes through a merits hearing, and it culminates in a rendering of an award, in this instance non-binding. There is no exit ramp in the AAA rules. Once these arbitrations are commenced, they go to completion.
But if we can do this, why shouldn't we consider your contract with the plaintiffs illusory? Nothing seems to bind you to the contract.
The contract is the franchise agreement, and there's ample consideration given by Steak and Shake to the plaintiffs in exchange for this as well as their other commitments.
Under Indiana law, can two parties make a contract that is non-binding on either party at the whim of the other?
If one party has no obligation whatsoever under a contract, no, Your Honor, that's an illusory contract. And that's the point that distinguishes this case from all of
the... Yeah, you're going to have to explain to me how this is any different.
Okay. Many of the cases, if not all of them, discussed in the briefs were the standalone arbitration agreements under which one party said, okay, I commit to arbitrate. And the other party had no obligations at all. Your reference, Your Honor, to Chief Judge Wood's decision in the Penn case is a perfect example. In that case, the plaintiff was committed to arbitrate, but the other party to that agreement, EDS, this arbitration services provider, had really no obligation. It could provide a coin toss, and it would have satisfied its obligations. That's not consideration. What Steak and Shake gave as consideration for the plaintiff's commitment that Steak and Shake could institute this system at any time was all of the benefits conferred on it, on each of them, under the terms of the franchise agreement. So this case, if I might, this is not that standalone agreement, but rather this is a very different situation where you have a larger agreement unquestionably providing ample consideration, one term of which is that we reserve the right to implement this system.
Look, when you examine only the contract that the franchisees,
it's
a sandwich, as far as I'm concerned, signed. There are no definite terms, and it's completely unclear what issues are subject to arbitration. I can't get past. I'm trying so hard, but I can't get past the fact that it's more in the form of an agreement to agree rather than an actual contractual provision, and you can create an arbitration system with virtually any terms,
as long as they're reasonable. If I might try to address
where does the reasonability requirement come from?
I'm not going to say
it doesn't come from your arbitration provision, does it?
Your Honor, in the Hooters case, the Fourth Circuit said, which is a very similar situation where Hooters created this system after the fact. The Fourth Circuit was not concerned by the fact that it was something that would be created in the future, but rather they were concerned with and determined that Hooters had breached the contract because the system that it implemented was so ridiculously biased that it wasn't fair. Nobody can argue that the system that we have implemented is reasonable and fair. It is mainstream arbitration under the rules of the principal provider of arbitration in the country.
Would you agree that the only authority for a stay would be the FAA, that there's nothing in your contracts or provisions that authorize a stay?
Yes, Your Honor. I think Section 3. Section 3 is what requires that the litigation be stayed below.
So unless you get the benefit of the FAA, you get no stay.
Well, we didn't move under the Indiana statute. And frankly, I give that some thought. None of the state statutes or the Uniform Arbitration Acts define arbitration in a way that the Federal Arbitration Act doesn't. So I don't think the answer to this question is going to differ whether we're asking it under the FAA or asking it under a state law. So to answer your question, no, it comes from Section 3 of the Federal Arbitration Act.
So would I be wrong if I thought that the franchisees are obligated to file suit in court and Steak and Shake may, at its whim, implement a system of non-binding arbitration that will supplant that litigation or maybe even be conducted in parallel?
That's exactly what the franchisees agreed to in writing when they entered into their franchise agreements.
So I'm not wrong. I'm right.
As to the first part, yes. But as to parallel, no, Your Honor, because under the FAA, assuming it applies, we're permitted to seek a stay upon finding that there is an arbitration.
But not obligated to.
We're not obligated
to. So it could be parallel.
It could be.
And you could have asked for this arbitration or insisted on it, say, a week before a trial date, right? Or maybe during trial.
Mm-hmm. I suppose we could have, Your Honor, but the fact of the matter is, of course, we immediately implemented the policy, and within the time for our initial responsive pleading, we immediately moved to stay.
But who knows what you would do the next time?
If we breach our contract, the result would be the Hooters result. And the point is, Steak and Shake has not done that. All that Steak and Shake has done is exercise an express contract right, and it's done so with imminent reasonableness in adopting the process that it has.
Do you want to save some time?
Yeah, I better.
Oh, yeah, I think so.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. Miss Ahmad. Yes? You're so far away. I don't blame you. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Kirsten Ahmad, and I
again, could you speak up as well?
Yes, I will try.
No. I'm having trouble hearing this.
We're all deaf up here.
I will try.
Think of it that way.
My name is Kirsten Ahmad, and I represent the franchisees, the plaintiffs appellees in this matter. We are asking that this court affirm the district court's order denying Steak and Shake's motion to stay and to compel non-binding arbitration of the claims in this matter so that the franchisees can finally move forward with the lawsuits they filed in the district court over a year ago. And I think it's worth getting into at least just a little bit background of the litigation because that's relevant to why Steak and Shake is trying so hard to compel non-binding arbitration and to stay these cases, why these cases are not going to settle in a non-binding arbitration, and why it is so important for the franchisees' lawsuits to move forward right away in the district court. Now, the dispute that is the subject of this lawsuit is not a new one. And Judge Rovner, you may recall the Stellar litigation. In 2010, Steak and Shake enacted a menu and pricing policy. Under that policy, every franchisee across the nation, regardless of geographical location, regardless of operational cost, was required to adopt set menu pricing on every single item on their menus. Now, the effect of that policy is that the franchisees, the vast majority of their menu items, they had to decrease the prices and had a corresponding significant loss in profits. That caused a system-wide revolt. The franchisees filed an association to try to fight the policy, and it culminated in a lawsuit by Steak and Shake's oldest and largest franchisee, Stellar Incorporated. And that's in part as well because since 1939, when Steak and Shake opened its first franchise, the franchisees since that time had always had the right to set their own prices. That litigation, the Stellar litigation, went on for 2 years. And again, Judge Rovner, as you may recall, it came up here before this court on a motion for preliminary injunctive relief. Stellar was asking the court to enjoin Steak and Shake from enforcing the policy during the pendency of the litigation because the company was going to lose so much money that it thought it would go out of business. This court affirmed the district court's decision granting the motion for preliminary injunction. The case went back to the district court, and in the district court, the district court granted Stellar's motion for summary judgment. On the heels of that lawsuit, these three lawsuits were filed. These lawsuits are under materially identical agreements, at least in all relevant respects, and the claims are very similar. They're as close as they could be. And these franchisees all have at least 10 years left in term on all of their agreements, with one exception. I think of the 8 restaurants, there's one restaurant that has a slightly shorter term. They're continuing to lose money every day that these cases are pending in the district court. Now, within less than a month after they filed suit, Steak and Shake suddenly, out of the blue, adopted this non-binding arbitration policy. And I think when you look at the facts, it's obvious what happened here. After not being successful in the Stellar litigation, Steak and Shake, after these suits were filed, went back, looked at the provision, and found this provision in the agreement, and decided to come up with as onerous of a policy as it could, which is exactly what it did. It could have chosen mediation over non-binding arbitration, but it didn't. It chose non-binding arbitration. It chose to apply the commercial rules rather than the more streamlined non-binding rules that typically would apply that do not provide for discovery, do not provide for depositions, and in fact, the entire non-binding arbitration under those rules can't last longer than 120 days. Now, under the commercial rules, and Steak and Shake has admitted this and mentioned it in its brief, the median length of an arbitration under the commercial rules is 9.9 months. So that's 10 months where the franchisee's claims are going to sit in the district court just collecting dust while they're waiting all for a decision that is not going to bind anyone and is not going to resolve anything.
Well, of course, it would seem that your reading of the arbitration language in the contracts gives that language no meaning at all. Is there a way to make that language meaningful? Because don't we have an obligation to assume that every clause has some meaning?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head earlier when you said that this is an agreement to agree. There is no consideration for this provision itself. Steak and Shake is not obligated to do anything under the provision. It's not obligated to submit its own claims to non-binding arbitration. And I think what's important is that Steak and Shake is trying to use the provision to retroactively apply to claims that already accrued and were already pending. So to the extent there's going to be...
Does consideration have to be given for each provision in an agreement?
Well, I don't think it does, but I think at some point there has to be some level of fairness. Steak and Shake obviously has allowed the franchisees to franchise its brand, but in return for that, the franchisees are paying substantial royalties to Steak and Shake. In addition, under Prima Paint, the arbitration agreement is severable from the remainder of the agreement. And here, when you look at it separately, there's nothing. There's no consideration at all.
What in the contracts gives Steak and Shake the right to change the arbitration system once it's in place? In other words, what you're saying is that they can change the terms in the middle of the arbitration or terminate a pending arbitration or sit, while in district court, while dust covers everything in the place. But what language specifically gives them the right to do so?
There's nothing in the agreement to prevent them from doing so. If they can institute a policy of non-binding arbitration at any time, I don't see what is to prevent them from changing that policy tomorrow and instituting a new policy.
So do you think they could toss a coin and get away with it?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't think so under the Hooters case.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think so. I'd like to turn to why it's appropriate that the district court found that the FAA does not apply here. And I think it's important.
Are you getting into whether non-binding arbitration is really arbitration under the FAA? Is that what you're coming to?
Yes, I am. I submit that Congress did not contemplate, nor did it intend, for the FAA to be used as it's being used here.
Well, I'm curious about that. Section 9 of the FAA begins with the phrase, if the parties in their agreement have agreed that a judgment of the court shall be entered upon the award made pursuant to arbitration. That language suggests to me that Congress left it to the parties to decide whether the arbitration that would be subject to the FAA would be binding or non-binding. What do you think about that?
I think that Section 9, 10, and 11 are rendered superfluous in the context of a non-binding arbitration.
That's true. There's nothing to enforce, but Congress made enforcement contingent on an agreement to that the result be enforceable, didn't it?
But I think you have to look at all of the language in the FAA, the totality of it. And the FAA in Section 2, I believe, states in terms of to settle by arbitration a controversy, not to maybe settle, but to settle. And I think that's important, and that's what Judge Weinstein focused on in one of the earliest, if not the earliest, decisions on this matter in AMF versus Brunswick. And he looked at it as whether or not, in light of reasonable commercial expectations, the dispute would be settled by virtue of the mechanism that had been chosen. And in that case, now, the facts were very different. AMF and Brunswick are bowling equipment manufacturers, and at issue there was an agreement they had to send all disputes to a non-binding forum that related to database superiority claims in advertisements. After Brunswick made such a claim, AMF tried in the district court to move to compel them to participate in this non-binding forum. And the Judge Weinstein there said that under reasonable commercial expectations, the dispute would be settled there. And the reason it would be settled is because Brunswick was really, or AMF was really looking for the data that supported the advertisement. And it would get that and find out whether or not the data did support the advertisement in that forum. In the event that the data did support the advertisement, AMF would probably be done. In the event that it did not, Brunswick would probably change its advertisements. So viewed in the light of reasonable commercial expectations, the case would be settled in that forum. We don't have that here. The franchisees aren't looking for any kind of data on the policy. They adopted it under a reservation of rights 3 years ago. They know that it doesn't make business sense for them and that they're not profitable. So this case is not likely to settle. It's also not likely to settle based on the Stellar litigation. It's not likely to settle because this litigation has been pending for a year and nothing has happened. Nothing has prevented Steak and Shake from engaging in a dialogue regarding settlement. This case was assigned to a Rule 33 conference here, and nothing became of that. And I think one other piece that's very important is that the purpose, according to Steak and Shake, of the menu and pricing policy is uniformity of the brand. It is so important to uniformity of the brand that a burger has to cost the same in New York as it would cost in Springfield, Illinois. And if you look at it that way, any type of a settlement would require the parties to completely concede their positions, because either Steak and Shake is allowed under the franchise agreements to enforce the policy against the franchisees, or it's not. I don't think there's any middle ground. Because
I'm sorry. Forgive me, but are you arguing at this point that the agreement was unconscionable, actually unconscionable?
Well, we've made that argument as well. But what I'm arguing here is that the FAA does not apply, because under the mechanism here, there's no reasonable commercial expectation that it's going to settle the case.
Judge McKinney did not find it to be unconscionable, did he?
Right.
McKinney did not find it to be unconscionable, but I think it is unconscionable for a lot of the same reasons that this court has already discussed in terms of it being illusory.
Well, would I be wrong if I thought that it's unclear whether there's an implied duty of good faith and fair dealing in franchise contracts in Indiana?
Well, Indiana, we've cited a couple of cases in our brief that do support a duty of good faith and fair dealing in a franchise agreement. And in addition, actually, the case that Steak and Shake cited in its brief, the Arcangelo versus Direct Buy case, in that case, the court looked at and stated that a duty of good faith and fair dealing could be implied in an agreement where the provision itself is ambiguous as to whether or not the covenant applied. And here, there's nothing in this provision stating that there's a duty of good faith or even referencing the duty of good faith.
Forgive me. But I take it you would agree with me, well, maybe not, that the question of whether non-binding arbitration is really arbitration under the FAAA is the subject of a circuit split.
It is. It is. And six of the nine circuits under their analysis would come down in our favor on that question. And that's because whether or not they're all using slightly different language, but I think the point is that the dispute resolution mechanism has to provide a settlement of the dispute. It has to be, I think it needs to be final, it needs to be binding, but most importantly, there needs to be a reasonable commercial expectation that the dispute is going to be settled. And in addition, the purpose of the FAA is not served because this is not an effective alternative to litigation for the same reason. The purpose of the FAA is to provide an alternative to litigation and to provide one that is less costly and more efficient.
What you said about the Stellar case, this is not directly on point, but I thought there was a settlement after the summary judgment. I thought that a notice of appeal got filed and then there was a subsequent settlement.
There was a settlement after the summary judgment. The terms of the settlement are confidential.
Of course, of course.
Yeah.
Even to us.
Yes. But this case is, for all of the reasons that I stated, a settlement is not going to happen here. It's very obvious that Steak and Shake is not interested in settling. And, for all of the reasons that it stated that uniformity is so important, any kind of a settlement is not going to allow that uniformity that Steak and Shake claims is the purpose underlying its policy. And I think my light is on.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you. We ask that this court affirm the district court's decision.
Thank you very much. How much time does Mr. Cohen have?
3 minutes. Thank you. Steak and Shake is very interested in settlement. In the Rule 33.
You hear that?
In the Rule 33.
Less recess.
Go on
go
out.
Talk.
Exactly. Go ahead. Out there.
In the Rule 33 conference, we asked for certain P&L information that we don't have in order to make a meaningful settlement offer. It was never provided to us. Let me say a few words about dust. In June of 2010, Steak and Shake implemented its maximum pricing policy in response to an existential threat to the brand posed by the worst economy since the Great Depression. The decision was made to position the brand within the Better Burger segment as the value proposition. It had to be uniform. The plaintiffs waited 3 years, nearly 3 years before filing suit, and now they complain about a delay of 9.9 months. And they complain about costs, and by the way,
I'm confused why you contend the Brunswick litigation should be stayed, because it seems to me there's nothing in this arbitration process that could affect any ruling in that case.
Agreed. Yeah, Your Honor, we have not moved to compel in that as to that one agreement. It's not a separate case. It's one agreement of five in one case. So what we have asked the district court to do is to compel as to four of the agreements and stay as to all of them so that issues don't get... And that's consistent
I'm not sure why it would matter that it be stayed, because there could be no rulings made in the arbitration that would bind any of the litigation.
I suppose that's correct, and I think it's all... Yeah, I suppose that's correct.
It seems to be flexing muscles you don't have.
Well, I think what we're really trying to do is put that on hold so we can do what we agreed to do in the arbitration. Final point, with respect to the complaint about cost of the non-binding arbitration.
I think if your considerable talents would be used in working at settling in this case, you could avoid perhaps bad law being made.
Your Honor, here's the last point I want to make. Understand that Steak and Shake is a motivated participant in settlement for the reason that this policy is a response to an existential threat. We need to reach a resolution that we can take to the market in a consistent manner. We can argue about whether we can enforce this. We've enforced the policy in the district court in Denver successfully. We didn't want to. We didn't want to terminate, but we successfully enforced it. Stuller, which, by the way, has been vacated, Stuller was decided at summary judgment on a 60-year course of conduct that has no relevance whatsoever to these cases. We can enforce this. We need to enforce it, and the best way to do it is by reaching agreement. And just as Stuller settled, these cases can and should settle. Thank you very much.
Well, all right. Thank you very much to both parties, and the case will be taken under advisement. Thank you.